Good morning and welcome to Focus on Health, the weekly radio program where we talk about all the great things happening at Van Deese Medical Center. I am your host, Lori Foster, and on today's program, we are going to continue the discussion about dementia with nurse practitioner Jade Williams. Before we start into that program, I do have a couple of announcements I'd like to share with listeners. The first is a welcome to Quincy Olendijk, who is a physician assistant. She is the newest health professional to join our physician provider team at Van Deese Medical Center. Quincy will be working with orthopedic surgeon Dr. Samasetti, providing orthopedic services in our surgery and specialty clinic department. More details will be shared when Quincy will begin seeing patients. For now, we extend a warm welcome again to physician assistant Quincy Olendijk. We have a great community event I'd like to share on human trafficking. Community members are invited to attend a free educational program on human trafficking in Iowa next Tuesday, June 30th, from 5 to 7 in the Van Deese Medical Center Clinic Boardroom. We do encourage those that will be joining us to enter through the exterior door that is located between the hospital and clinic entrances. The event is sponsored by Van Deese Medical Center and Trinity Lutheran Church of Ellsworth and is open to the public. The presenter will be Stacy Besch of Team Iowa. She will provide an informative discussion on the realities of human trafficking in Iowa, including why our state has become vulnerable to trafficking activity and what community members can do to help prevent exploitation. Topics she will discuss include what makes Iowa susceptible to human trafficking, the realities of human trafficking occurring in our state, some common misconceptions and myths surrounding trafficking, warning signs and indicators community members should recognize, as well as practical action steps individuals can take to protect vulnerable populations. Human trafficking is often misunderstood and can occur in communities of all sizes, including rural communities. This educational event aims to increase awareness, equip attendees with knowledge to recognize potential trafficking situations, and empower community members to take an active role in prevention and advocacy. Again, there is no cost to attend. All interested community members are encouraged to participate. Again, that is next Tuesday, June 30th, from 5 to 7 p.m. in the clinic boardroom at Van Deese Medical Center. And lastly, I want to mention we do have our Restore Us Care Ministry that is offered on the second Tuesday of each month. And I do share this in advance because starting in July, the time is going to change a little bit. So this is for anyone who might be navigating the loss of a loved one, maybe going through a divorce, job loss, or any other significant life transition. This group offers a compassionate space to be seen, heard, and supported. This support group is facilitated by Pastor Sarah Namukose, and they do meet the second Tuesday of each month. So this group will be meeting on July 14th, that is a Tuesday, from 11:30 to 1 p.m. in the hospital conference room at Van Deese Medical Center. And with that, we are ready to start into our program. Where we left off from part one, last week's program, Jade was talking about the importance of exercise to maintain your memory, why this helps increase the blood flow throughout your body and decrease your inflammation. The recommendation is for everyone to get 30 to 45 minutes of exercise most days of the week. With that, we will start in with Jade.
Of course, this is a great time of year to go swimming, indoor, outdoor, however you can do it. But swimming is great on your joints. So if or aquacize. So if you feel like you're having walking is very stressful on your joints. It's actually one of the more difficult things that we tax our body with that we don't tend to think of because it's something that we just are expected to do as mm-hmm. humans, right? But you're expected to be erect, upright, have good posture. You're really engaging your core, actually. So core strength is very important. If you're going upstairs, you should be not leaning forward. And as long as you're standing upright and erect while you're walking up the stairs and you're activating your glutes, I mean, it's a whole thing. And so we don't tend to think of really what our body is being expected to do just to walk. But swimming is great because you're not putting as much stress on your joints. You're allowing the buoyancy of the water to kind of help you. It's great for your cardiovascular system. I think the biggest thing to realize is that swimming is at your own pace. It's actually quite difficult of a sport. Mm-hmm. And then also thinking about if your goal is to complete, say, a mile of swimming, you're probably looking at least an hour in the water. So, you might be able to accomplish walking, you know, a mile in 15 minutes or less. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to swim, you're really committing to, you know, an hour. So don't be hard on yourself if you're not able to accomplish that. And then also if you're swimming outdoor versus indoor, you know, you have the water temperature as well as the elements. And then also the water temperature is going to play into what your metabolic rate is doing while you're swimming. So even just a couple degree temperature difference will cause you to burn more calories outside swimming versus indoor. And so sometimes these are little nuances we don't tend to think about. And then strength training, really being sure that we're hitting on 2 to 3 sessions a week, being sure you're utilizing good form. And this can be anything from using resistance bands to body weight, all the way up to actual, you know, dumbbells or machines or whatever, you know, you're able to do. And like I said, even moderate activity several times a week provides benefits. So if you're overwhelmed with what I just said, I'm sorry, but really just start anywhere.
Start somewhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's you just start with the 10 air squats every hour for 8 hours and then kind of build from there, you know, and go see what happens. So, and then heart health equals brain health. So I have kind of mentioned cardiovascular health a couple times already, but many of those same factors that protect the heart also protect the brain. And so this includes managing your blood pressure, controlling your diabetes, maintaining healthy cholesterol levels, and avoiding smoking. So other things to think about building a healthy brain would be healthy eating. So research often highlights eating patterns such as that Mediterranean diet, which really emphasizes healthy fats, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, fatty fishes, nuts, olive oils, those types of things. So really thinking about what's the clean, simple ingredients that you can be incorporating into your daily habits and then kind of building from there. You know, I think we underestimate our fats got a really bad rap there for quite a long time. And so really being sure you're striving. Fats are a great way to keep you feeling full longer. It also helps provide, you know, excellent energy and, it supports your hormones. So really thinking about how to do that. And then of course, if you're eating whole fruits and vegetables, then you're going to be increasing that fiber intake as well, which is so important. And then mental stimulation, you know, challenging your brain regularly. Examples include, you know, reading. And this could be anything like a recipe. So sometimes this is where patients, families may start to notice that the family member is having issues is that they maybe like to bake or cook. Mm-hmm. And they're not doing that. Or if they are doing it, they're missing critical steps. The brain grows the most when you do things it doesn't want to do, whether that's activity or, you know, cognitive stimulation. So even reading can help your brain continue to stay healthy and grow. So thinking about that, obviously learning a new language, learning to play a musical instrument, puzzles, doing any types of continuing education, whether that's something that is for your career or maybe it's a second career or something you've just always been interested in, you know, really kind of stretching yourself. And then, of course, dancing. You know, a lot of studios now are offering adult dance classes, and that is a great activity to do. It's engaging your senses. So the more senses you can engage is also always really great. And so thinking about that, you're having to memorize patterns and different techniques. You know, you're listening to the music and you're trying to find rhythm and different things like that. And then of course you're creating physical activity. Mm-hmm. So that's also a really good one. And then social connection. This is, I think, one, unfortunately, we're seeing a huge, it's just kind of, we need to build it back up. You know, physical social connection has really changed a lot since the initiation of Facebook and other types of social media. You know, it's not uncommon to see people out, but then their phones are there. And if the conversation maybe starts to lull, you know, I myself am guilty of it. You just kind of pick up your phone and you might start scrolling, you know, mm-hmm. or maybe you are having a conversation with somebody, but you're still scrolling on your phone, you know, because you're like, well, this is stimulating, but then also what they're saying, but then you're not really engaged. And so just being mindful of that and trying to really challenge yourself. There's so much that our brain picks up on while we're socializing with somebody. So you're noticing all these little micro changes in the facial expressions, their breathing pattern, how they're sitting, how their body shifts, you know. And so you can really tell if somebody's engaged with you, because a lot of times they might mirror different activities that you're doing while you're visiting with them. And so, you know, just really thinking about it, being mindful, and then knowing that the more social interaction you have, the better mood, you're going to have that cognitive stimulation. But then also, if you start to have patterns of groups that you're hanging out with, then they also start to hold each other accountable. And so if somebody's missing that day, they're more apt to check in and see how they're doing and right. let them know that they are important and that they're valued. Mm-hmm. And so once again, we're just kind of reiterating some of those key points.
And I am so glad you shared that, because our phones and social media and different platforms do not replace personal connection.
Right.
And so I do love that you brought that up and share that, because especially as people age too, those connections get fewer and fewer, and we need to make sure that people are continue to incorporate them into their lives. Right. And don't just rely on their phone as a place of engagement, because it is not a substitution, for sure.
Right. And it's so, you know, I go around at our care centers and our assisted living, and I always think to myself, like, you know, to be one of the new ones coming in, to think about what that could be like you're just coming, it's like high school all over, you know, you're coming in to this established environment as a new person. You may or may not be from the area or even know people that are living there. And then you are just trying to kind of assimilate into that environment. But also, it's difficult to make social connections, especially in a nursing home, because there's a lot of routine, you know, and you're kind of usually dependent on what the staff are able to do and when they're able to do it. So there's so many factors there that I think sometimes we forget about, or that we just kind of glaze over because it's a community or it's a care center, mm-hmm. or whatever you want to call them. And so I think that could definitely be something that we do a better job with. And I know at least for all, you know, I'm going to say three, but we really have four, because we have Southfield Assisted Living, Windsor Assisted Living, and then Southfield Care Center, and then Crestview Care Center. The activity directors at all of them do such a great job. I mean, they're constantly trying to be creative. How can we get them to do things? What can we bring in to try to stimulate them? What can we bring in just to try and bring some normalcy to, you know, their current living situation that they may not enjoy? You know, assisted living is much different too than a nursing home. And so I wish that was something that we just continue to have a better understanding of. But I think that comes with education as well. So thinking about how can you foster the social interaction to maintain even where they're at currently in their brain health all across wherever you're at is something that we have to really think about and be cognizant. And sometimes it takes more work, you know. So when you do think about picking up your phone, try to avoid that little level of resistance, because one, then you're still growing your brain, and two, you're challenging yourself, and you're also, you know, you never know what you could be missing out on. So and then of course thinking about the volunteer work, being active in your church. You know, we have a gift shop here. We have a volunteer program here. So those are all great ways. You know, and then also we don't have it incorporated here yet, but there are some care communities, especially in other countries, that have started to incorporate more of like a volunteer system. So the patients or the residents, so to speak, who have different care needs versus maybe not as heavy as some of the others, they kind of take up jobs within the care center. And so it gives them pride, it gives them a job, it gives them independence and all these things, a sense of community. And so that's something else, you know, maybe eventually our long-term care will kind of maybe start to move into those directions. And then, you know, we've talked a lot about the patient and kind of the families and different tips and tricks to do, but really thinking about now the caregiver and how do they find support. So this is a long chronic diagnosis wherever you fall within, you know, the realm of dementia. And so dementia diagnosis is going to obviously be affecting more than just the individual themselves, but it affects their entire families as well as their social network. And so caregivers often face significant emotional, physical, as well as financial challenges. Common caregivers can experience things like stress, anxiety, fatigue, grief, and then of course isolation. And that's why support is so essential. And so families can really benefit from gaining education to learning about the specific diagnosis, and that will help set some realistic expectations for them. And this could be something, you know, you just do a quick Google search, or, you know, maybe your local clinic has some resources for you or a social worker. So I would say just never be afraid to ask, you know, what resources or, you know, if we don't know of a resource, then I'm more than happy to sit down and help find them with you, because that will also add a little extra value to it. And then support groups, connecting with others facing similar challenges, can reduce feelings of isolation. You know, we have a great program, Senior Life, here. And so there's different reasons maybe to be a part of that, but that's a good place to start, and see if you, because it's great for social interaction. And it's specifically for 65 and over. And so really thinking about what are those transitions that's going on in our older adult life, and how can we continue to stay connected? And then thinking about respite care, you know, short-term caregiving assistance allows families, caregivers time to rest and recharge. I think sometimes families and friends feel guilty for being interested in this, and this should not be the case at all. I also feel like there is an underlying fear of that they may be told maybe they're not taking good care of the person if they come in. And I want them, I want everybody to understand that that's, we're not here to judge. No. That's not the case. But it does allow for an opportunity if you feel like you're struggling with the management of care. Well, let's see what resources and tools we have. It's not always, well, they must go to a nursing home. You know, that's not the answer for everybody, and that's not what people necessarily want to do. But it will allow for a little bit of a rest and relaxation, hopefully recharging for you. And then also that can be a great time for us to help you figure out what resources and tips and tricks might be available as well. And then planning ahead, you know, early discussions about healthcare wishes, legal planning, financial decisions can reduce uncertainty later. This is huge, you know, so working on a living will, visiting with your lawyer, visiting with your family. You can always have an iPost filled out with your provider. You know, so just kind of identifying what it is that you really want, because if for some reason a critical situation arises and nobody really knows, and as healthcare providers, we default to what we know, and mm-hmm. that's to save you. And maybe that's not at all but what your wishes are,
right?
And we could really be affecting your quality of life by some of those interventions. So thinking about and making your wishes known. And so, you know, while preparing the show, I found a really great podcast called Dementia Care Blazers. She has an entire show. All of her shows are dedicated to patients with dementia, the caregivers, and they're in little snippets. So some of her shows are only like 11 minutes long, which is great. And she also has a YouTube channel. So like if you want more information or that one specifically fits to you, then you can go when you have more time to YouTube. So it's Dementia Care Blazers, and it's hosted by Dr. Natalie. You can find it, you know, just Google it. And it's great. And like I said, all of her things are very quick tips and tricks. And then she also offers free training on how to care for a loved one with dementia without feeling overwhelmed, dread, and confusion. And I thought that was great that she says that like outright, because her goal is for nobody to feel guilty or feel overwhelmed, right? So, you know, thinking about how can we return to that theme? What we know, what we're learning. So what we know is that dementia is a complex group of conditions affecting memory, thinking, and daily life. And so I just want to touch quickly on what is our current treatment, right? This is a disease process that we can not cure currently. There are multiple things that have come out. We got infusions. We have specialized testing for amyloid. I mean, there's all these things that's available. But what is currently our best treatment is donepezil and memantine. Okay, these are, or name brand, Aricept, Namenda. And so what do these two medications do? They just simply treat the symptoms of the patient. And the goal is they try to kind of prevent the progression from being rapid, essentially. Okay. And so there, it's not a cure, but they can help maintain the cognitive function in the patient as well as daily functioning for longer. And so I typically use this if it's appropriate in any of my patients. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge fan. I feel like it does improve them overall. And each medication is titrated just a little bit different. So Aricept specifically increases the chemical for acetylcholine. So this is going to help with memory, learning, attention, and can be used in mild, moderate, and severe cases. So when these meds first came out, there was some recommendation that if the patient progressed past a certain level, we would just remove these medications. Personally, from my own experience with that, I've seen quick deterioration in the patient. So and guidelines now say mild, moderate, and severe. So it is something that the patient can definitely continue on until they are, you know, way past advanced. And then we can, you know, be looking at other ways to help their quality of life. Namenda, so it really regulates a different brain chemical, specifically glutamate. And this is involved in the learning and memory as well, but it improves their thinking and reasoning. So this is why we like to use them together. There are cases where you might use one and not the other, but typically for all my patients, I'm going to put them on Aricept and Namenda together. And then we will manage the titration as needed. I don't necessarily go up all the way to the therapeutic recommendation or what the max is, because if the lower doses are working, then that gives us room down the road. You know, I don't want to dispense it all out the gate. So Namenda can help with agitation or behavioral symptoms, as well as can be used in mood, as well as moderate and severe cases of patients. So they're typically used together, like I said. And then in Lewy body, this would be the one caveat, the donepezil or Aricept is helpful because of the attention, alertness, and it can also improve hallucinations in Lewy body, which I think is great. I think it might be underutilized, and so that's something to really think about. But really, the goals of these two medications is going to be to slow down the decline and make better day-to-day functioning for the patient and improve attention and engagement. Those are the three primary takeaways for the use of these meds. But hands down, excellent resource. And so definitely, if you feel like you have a loved one who is having cognitive issues, these would be two medications to visit with your primary care provider about, or you can come and see me, or we'd be happy to give you a referral. So, you know, researchers are uncovering new insights into brain health, risk reduction, earlier diagnosing, and emerging treatments, and there's genuine reason for hope, but challenges continue to remain, and advances in science are helping us better understand these conditions and improve quality of life for patients and families. If you notice concerning changes in memory or thinking, either in yourself or someone you love, don't ignore them. That would probably be the biggest recommendation. Early evaluation can provide answers, support, and allow for access to good resources. So thank you so much for letting me talk your ears off about stuff that I clearly am passionate about.
And it's a perfect time to be talking about it. Such great information, helpful tips shared, not only for patients, but family members and loved ones and the caregivers too. So you really covered it all. And I so appreciate you sharing the information, Jade. I do want to mention to our listeners, Jade oversees our skilled care program here at the hospital. As she mentioned in the program too, she is an adult primary care gerontologist and she sees patients at Vandy's Family Health Clinic here in Webster City. If you have questions or you would like to schedule an appointment with Jade, you can call the clinic at 515-832-7800. Again, thanks so much, thanks. Jade. Great program.
Thanks.
That will do it for today's edition of Focus on Health, brought to you by Vandy's Medical Center, where our focus is you.